Okay, guys, very welcome back to the show. I've got a very special guest on the show today, J.R. Ryder. He's here to talk to us about some of his memories from the pro wrestling business. First of all, man, thanks a million for coming on.
That'll probably appreciate you having me, brother.
Appreciate it. That's exactly what I was going to get into first. Thanks, Noah. Noah's wishing his greetings. So talk to me about this Irish connection. Everyone seems to have one. I'd like to hear your story.
Oh, well, I'm an Irish boy from Philadelphia, brother. Yeah, I've been to the parades. We have the greatest funerals in the world. Somebody dies in an Irish family, it's the best party of all time.
We love drinking at weddings, funerals, christenings, birthdays, whatever it is.
Funerals are better parties. It's the craziest thing about that. My grandmother passed away, and I spent 3 hours signing autographs at the freaking... I walked in there and a stack of 8x10s signing my whole family.
Got to make that money.
Yeah. I didn't charge. My mother had them sitting there. Her and my uncle had this all planned out to torture me for 3 hours. Awesome. So I sat there and drank.
We're going to talk about, firstly, I just want to ask, like, how did you get into wrestling? And then we'll talk about your training process to where you got.
Well, you know, you're going back to 1995. So 1995, I was driving a beer truck. I was a truck driver for Miller Beer. And my route was Aston, Pennsylvania. When I started driving a beer truck in 93 or so, I only weighed about 165 pounds. I'm 6'3". I was a skinny guy. I had beautiful hair. I was, you know, my brothers and I were in a big band. And we were Teamsters. So we weren't allowed to go back to the warehouse until our shift was over. If we got done our route in 2 hours, we had, you know, 6 hours to kill. So I joined a gym. And I just started lifting all day long and eating. So after about 2 years of that, year and a half of that, you're going around 1995. I was in a parking lot, actually delivering beer to Aston Beverage. I had a keg on one shoulder and a case of beer on a rack, and a guy walked up to me in a parking lot, Nate Hatred, actually, and he taught me to go to wrestling school. I went to Liberty All-Star Wrestling in Concordville, Pennsylvania, or Concordville, not Concordville, down by Seacane. I went down to that. Glenn Osborne trained me, little tiny hole in the wall. Ceiling wasn't even high enough to take a big bump, but that's where I trained at, with Glenn Osborne and Bay Ragney, who was Chubby Dudley in ECW.
Oh, yes, I had Chubby on the show, and I'm sure, actually, I think he's seen that you were popping up on this show, and I think he wants to get you as a future guest on his show, Chewing the Fat, which is a really good show as well.
Great guy. Wonderful guy. Wonderful guy.
Such a nice dude.
Nice guy and an honest guy. And it was funny, because my first show for them, I think it was my second show ever, it was my first show for them. Was that like, it was like a school for the deaf or school for the blind. They had it there. And we were selling tickets. I was in a motorcycle gang, and like all my friends were insane, but they all came to the show. So I had like 80 insane people there, drunk, violent. I really thought they were going to beat up the freaking guys. I was wrestling the Lost Boys. I really thought they were going to fucking beat the guys. They were ruined. At one point it was funny. At the other point, they ruined the whole show for everybody else in the building. Should have been an ECW crowd, not a school of the blind crowd.
Yeah. Talk to me about being in that kind of ECW environment then.
Oh, God. See, Philly's a weird place. You had your extreme guys. And when ECW first came out, I wasn't really a fan of ECW. I liked what they were doing, but I didn't like how they did it. Because it was that time Shane Douglas had dropped the belt. And we were all working for Dennis Carluzzo out in Jersey at the time. So they really disrespected Dennis Carluzzo, who was great to all of us. It didn't go over well. I wasn't going to cut my forehead open or get hit with chairs every night of the week. I wanted to learn how to work. So that's why I stayed. I stayed at NWA. Jim Kettner found me in Jersey from ECWA, and he brought me to the East Coast Wrestling Association. And that's where I really excelled at. That's where I really learned how to work. I learned from Pat Kenny with Simon Diamond. I learned from Jim, of course. Glenn Osborne was there. I mean, I had a plethora of knowledge. Steve Carino, and these are just guys that through my whole, still my friends to this day. You know, you're talking 30, 40 years later, still my buddies. But ECWA is where I really, really learned it. And I wasn't the hardcore guy. I didn't have to go through tables. You know, I didn't think it was necessary. But ECW did great things for the business. It was funny around here because, you know, everybody was at ECWA, which was a family-friendly show. Certainly not as big as ECW, but we were more well-known. Super 8 time, that's where you wanted to be, was ECWA.
Obviously, you started in the business kind of relatively late, and then you progressed pretty quickly. And by 1998, you're appearing on WWF television. How did that come about so quickly?
I was in the music business for a long time, right? And being in that, I knew how to play politics. I see a lot of guys who get into wrestling, right? And they do every single independent show, and they're wrestling in the backyard. They're driving 500 miles to make $30. I'm out of that project. If it doesn't benefit me or make me better, I don't need $30. So I would pick my shots. So I stayed NWA, ECWA. I would travel only if they flew me out, but I would only do it if I was working someone that could learn from. I don't want to wrestle some new get hurt. You know, they only want to do 300 high spots. I want to do zero high spots. Maybe I'll do one. You know what I mean? I want to be Hulk Hogan, you know, Ultimate Warrior, shake the ropes and get my money. So I would hang close to home, man. And then Steve Corino. To this day, I give him credit. I probably thank him three times a year for my career. But Steve Corino is actually the one that called me for WWE one day. He was booking. I think Tom Brady might have been booking at the time. And he called me, got me booked for my first shot, which was New Haven Coliseum. And the rest was history. After that, I did really well, and they loved me and always brought me back constantly.
Yeah. Was it your first match then was against Dan Severn?
That's a funny story itself. So Dan Severn in 97, we were in Yardville, New Jersey. And I was talking to Dan, and Dan was trying to get me to go fight for UFC. To which I told him, and I thanked him profusely. Dan, he was going to train me and everything. And I said, Dan, I don't think they're ever going to make any money from me. You'll do great. You'll be a big hit. You got the hair. You'll look great. You'll make a ton of money. I was like, I don't think they're ever going to do anything, buddy. I love you. I know you're great. I can fight in the streets.
Yeah.
A year later, I'm in New Haven Coliseum sitting there waiting for my opponent. And here comes Jim Cornette, walks up to me and tells me, hey, best thing I can do for you, kid, is Dan Severn. Good luck. And Dan did what Dan does. He beat the shit out of me with a smile on his face. Very educatedly beat the piss out of me. He broke me in.
What did you find him like? And did you have a conversation about that previous conversation you had?
He knew me, you know, he knew me. I didn't bring it up, but I knew I was going to get stiffed in the match. I knew it was coming. And if you watch it, when he's got me on my face and he's just forearming me, I started laughing. He's like, oh, son of a bitch. Here we go. And he laid it into me. I told him to, though, but I get it. I give him a big hug backstage, and that's one of the things they respected that, appreciated it. Most guys would cry.
So you think he was a bit stiff because of the previous encounter, maybe?
Well, maybe. You know, I hate to say that about the guys. I really respect the hell out of Dan, but I would be. You know what I mean? On the other hand, he is Dan Severin. Like, you know what I mean? Everybody backstage was terrified of the guys. There's a reason for that.
Yeah.
So I don't think grudge on that, you know? Just in the back of my mind, I think a little bit, maybe.
In fairness to the guy, he was like one of the real ones, kind of like a Kurt Angle and a Lesnar even before their day, you know, the way he kind of carried on.
He's legit. I got to tell you, if you put him up against each other in a heyday, I think he beats Brock Lesnar.
Really, yeah?
I think he beats Brock Lesnar. Dude, he is legit. Not that Brock's not. I know Brock really well, too, but I got to tell you, I think in their heyday, I think Dan Severn gets him.
Yeah, when I was looking through your matches, then like one of them that struck me in 1999 was the Godfather, and of course that was the show that Draws had his terrible injury. Do you have any memories of being there for that moment?
That was Meadowlands, right? Yeah, I think it was the Meadowlands, and I remember it really well. I was with I got to tell you, I think I drove up there with Simon Diamond, Pat Kenny, and I don't know if Julio De Niro was there or not, but I remember we left the show early.
Okay.
We left right before that happened. And I heard them talking about that power bomb. I wouldn't take that running power bomb from anybody. And I don't think Draz should have either. I know the intention was there, but he's too big, man. And he was a great guy. Listen, Draw is one of my favorite human beings there. One of the first guys to really hang out with me, and him and I got along great. And it was devastating. In fact, I think I worked, was a Giant Silva that night, and that wasn't supposed to be on TV. It was a non-televised, and they had to put that on because of that, if I understood me correctly.
That was the cage match thing says that you fought the Godfather that night, but it could be, they could have
maybe it was not, maybe it was Godfather, it was just dark. But got yeah. One of my favorite opponents of all time. I love Godfather. One of my favorite
I had him on the show as well, and he was a blast. He was telling me that he used to go into Undertaker's casket backstage and smoke weed when he wasn't around.
Oh, right. One of the funniest guys you've ever met. Just a pleasure to be around. Gave you everything in the world. And these guys had no ego with me, I guess. A lot of guys would go up there, and they'd have this stupid little, you know, there used to be this handshake that guys would do. And everybody listening, if somebody tells you to use the worker's handshake, you're going to get the shit kicked out of you by a guy like me. Because I hate that thing. And I went up there and shook people's hands like a freaking man, looked in the eyes. And I was respected. I didn't get treated like the other guys. I think they knew, you know. I was respectful, and they respected me. So any stuff. I didn't go in and just get a job straight out unless you know, Tony Garea or Jerry Briscoe told me I had to. They gave me everything.
Yeah, and you had like your matches like that are listed there. They weren't exactly what you call traditional squashes, we'll say, that were from the 80s. I think in the 90s, they gave a lot of guys that were coming in a bit more freedom as well.
Well, we were tougher guys back then. We were tougher guys. And listen, you weren't going to squash me because I'm going to hit you. I don't care who you are. And like I said, me, Billy Fives, the guys that were there, you weren't squashing us. You're going to earn it. We're going to hit you. I'll lose, but I'm not going out like a bitch. That's not going to happen. Because if you can't beat me up in the locker room, you're not beating me up out here. And I get news for you. I'm one of the toughest guys in the locker room. That's not bragging. It's just a fact. You know, so they were all well-respected. Love them to them. It was a good time. Great Godfather, tremendous guy, hilarious. I think he was he might still be. He owned Cheetah's, the strip club in Vegas or something. He was
I think one of the those, yeah.
He's a great guy to be around.
Did that moment, though, when the draws incident happened and obviously the serious nature of it, did that make you ever consider what you're doing, or did it come into your thinking?
Not for one second. That was an isolated incident. And whoever, I don't know who the agent was in that match, and I don't want to talk bad about them all because they're all great to me. Whoever thought that was a good idea, I'm sure to this day they're probably upset about it. I know that D'Lo Brown, to this day, has never gotten over that. I know he has.
Yeah, of course.
He feels terrible about it. And they were good friends, man. And D'Lo never hurt anybody. So that was just, Draws was too big. Maybe he didn't sit up right. Maybe the ring. I don't know, man. But like anything where you're going to come down and jam that neck, I would have said, I would have bailed right out of that move. Wouldn't have happened. Wouldn't have done it.
Yeah. You were obviously, you were talking, like you see, you're saying you were always a careful worker. What was the worst injury you ever got across the years?
Can I tell you, man, I went my entire career. I mean, it wasn't up until 2015 I did an independent show and tore my ACL. Other than that, I had a concussion because of Nathan Jones, which actually turned into a different character for me, which I'll talk about shortly. But yeah, just the concussion by Nathan Jones is probably the worst thing I got on a spin kick from him. He still had a great match.
But
Tony, I made it out. I'm unscathed. I don't walk around with bad shoulders. I don't have a bad neck. I don't have bad knees. And I got to tell you, a lot of these guys that walk around talking about their injuries, I don't know how. Because, you know, they're bumping on the floor at independent shows because I walked out just fine.
Yeah. Like you face a lot of big guys. And another one that struck up there when I was researching was Albert. What was he like to work with? He's obviously still there now as an agent.
Another one of my favorite guys to work. I love working the big guys there because I could do – I was when I was a kid – my brother was like state champion gymnast. He was on Team Foxcatcher for John DuPont's Olympic team. He was ridiculous. So I was in gymnastics with him, but I sucked. But thank God that I was in it because at 6'3", I could do things nobody else could do. Like I could do a standing backflip at my height. No one else could do that. So I get with those big guys. I could do that stuff, you know? So there was an ongoing joke. And I started it with Dan Severn. If you watch all my matches, you'll see them. They'll get me in the corner. And I'll do the Beal over the top of the head. So it was always who could throw me the highest. And to this day, it's Albert. He definitely threw me the highest. And then we would lay out. I always tried to get him to break character in the ring, making fun of him. You'll see, I'll be, you know, pinching the back of his leg or sticking my finger up his nose or something. I'll do something though. But he's a great guy, man. Great. And not stiff. Big dude, not stiff at all. Stiff. I worked him in Test one time. And you watch that match, being a Vince Goodnight, their finish move at the end, it never touched me, but it looked like it ripped my head off. Never touched me. So I enjoyed working with them very much. Very good timing.
Yeah, Test was another guy that unfortunately we lost very early in the business. Do you have any memories of him?
Here's a funny story of Test. So I actually originally met Andrew Martin in ECWA. And that's where we talked. And we first met there, and then he came back for some shots there. And I had asked him one day, I said, what are they doing with you? Did they give you anything yet? And he goes, yeah, I got to talk to you about that. I said, why? He goes, they want me to dress just like you. And I was like, oh, no. I said, now I'm going to be an impersonator of you. He goes, yeah, I'm sorry. Whatever, dude. Because we look exactly the same. Like, when we're standing next to each other, like, we look almost identical, only he's 7 feet tall. So after they made him Test and put him in the black leather, there kind of became some animosity between us.
Oh, really?
From him, not from me. Like, this is my gimmick. I've been here way longer than you. So, if you'll see, when I worked him and other guys, I would put on I had a set of tights with flames all over them. I would switch into a different outfit. So we didn't look the same. But there was talks of me being called Quiz. And me and Test and Quiz versus Bob Holly and Crash. Was talked about that. They never did anything with it. I wish they had done something. But I don't know why it got squashed. But that would have been good. Crash Holly's a great friend of mine. Yeah, I miss him to death. But yeah, that would have been fun. But we worked a few times. Me and Test got along great again.
Yeah. Was there talks from the office of putting you two guys together, or how would you become aware of that?
Oh, backstage stuff. Luna Vachon, it was either Luna Vachon or Viscera. One of them started calling me Quiz. So you had Test, and they started calling me Quiz. And then it just started catching on. And then Shane McMahon's called me Quiz. Everybody just called me Quiz when I got there. So eventually, I'd be sitting next to Test. They'd be like, even Vince, like, Test, Quiz. I'm like, I guess this is happening. Then they had Test and Albert together, and they never did it. I wish they had. I would have driven him crazy.
TNA was pretty funny with Trish there as well. Did he make you change the ring gear, or was that decision that you made then?
It was me. Listen, it's a respect thing. Whoever gets it on TV first usually wins, which was me. But I didn't even get on TV first, because you go back to, it was Sid Vicious and them were wearing that 20 years prior to me, so no big deal. Yeah. My outfit, that outfit actually, with the flames on it, was actually a setup for me to go to the Brood. Because there was talk about it.
There's so much stuff going on here, so let's talk about that story.
There is an episode, was it Saturday Night Heat, where Mark Henry versus X-Pac, and this is when Mark Henry fell in love with China. And you'll see me hit Mark Henry with the magazine as he's coming down the alley. He pulls it out of my hand. But what you didn't see was before that, here come the Brood walking down. And they stopped, all three of them stared at me while I was in there with my trench coat, my hair down. So that was the beginning of it. But then they went with the Hardys. It was supposed to be me and Glenn Osborne was actually talking it to be in the new Brood. And they talked to us about it. Was it Sarge? It might have been Sarge. In Korea. So it was mentioned to us, and then they decided to go with the Hardys for the new Brood. So, again, talks, how serious it was, I don't know, but it was said to us. But Glenn and I were pretty excited about that.
Yeah. Did you find that was like that in those times? Like, plans would change all the time, or they weren't really sure what they were doing on a weekly basis?
Well, I change them daily. I mean, there's plenty of guys that were supposed to do things in the day of, they got squashed for whatever reason. You know, I don't know why. But you'd hear things all the time. You know, I was down at OBW, and then I was going down there and train, and there's a lot of stuff. But it switches daily because Vince would change his mind every hour and a half. So you never knew who was doing what. And also, it was the Valley of the Giants.
Sure.
Everybody's 7 feet tall. So I'm like the middle-sized guy, so where did I really fit in? They already had Edge. They had Christian. Now you got Test, who looks just like me. Where do I fit in all this, right? We have another Test the same size as Edge. So what are we doing them? The Brood was the thought, but it just didn't happen. That's okay.
Was there anyone backstage that you really looked up to or aspired to be like?
Oh, God. Undertaker's the guy, right? Like, You meet Undertaker. There's only been a few times where I got starstruck, and it was Undertaker and Vince. Like, really, just you meet Taker is the man. He walks in, and I don't care if you're me, if you're Stone Cold, Taker's the man. He's the guy you want to emulate to be. You want to act like Taker. If you could be like that guy, you know, he's the cool hand Luke of the whole business. So yeah, Taker's the guy.
Did you find someone like him would kind of keep the locker room together, as people often talk about?
You know, the locker room was good when I was there. There was never any. It was a lot of fun. Everybody got along. I never saw an oil problem. Chris, who was it? Lawler's kid. He was an asshole from time to time. But other than that, man, everyone was great. Ryan Christopher. Yeah. So other than that, everyone was. I never had one problem. Never got disrespected. Never got insulted. Never got nothing. But if there was a problem, you had a wrestler's court. That was Undertaker.
Yeah.
That was Undertaker. And JBL's the prosecutor. If you go on JBL's bad side, you're screwed.
I've heard some horror stories from people, even on this show, about times like that.
There were some bad ones, man. There were some times.
Did you experience any of them?
I did not. Lucky. It's all about being respectful and keeping your mouth, ears open, right? Mouth shut. Mm-hmm. Bradshaw had come to me one time. I was talking to Gangrel. This is when I was still wearing my black outfit. And he had come up. This is the first time I met him. And they were doing the Acolytes. And he came up, tapped me on the shoulder. And he introduced himself and asked me if I would take my outfit off because I looked too much like the Acolytes. Now, a lot of guys would have said something stupid. But I just said, yeah, absolutely no problem. Shook his hand and he was like surprised. He's like, "You sure?" I'm like, "Yeah, do I care?" So you'll watch. You'll see some episodes. I'll have my black leather on with blue tights, as opposed to all black, and I'll blue tape to the black tape. So that was because of Bradshaw. And after, dude, totally cool guy. Loved him and Ron Simmons. Never had an issue with any of them, man. Nice. Guys get their egos involved too much. It's just a television show, so don't take it personally. Exactly. They're big stars for a reason. If you want to not make it, get on there, get on Bradshaw's bad side because he'll torture you.
Did you ever have any interactions with the boss, Vince McMahon?
Very little. I spoke to him a couple of times, but he was one of those guys where it's best to not talk to Vince because you don't know where that's going to go. You know what I mean? Yeah. So I would say that Stephanie constantly, her and Shane. Stephanie and I are really good friends. Really became good friends. Shane, of course, but I was always talking to the Briscoes. I was talking to Tony Garea, Sarge all the time. Sarge is my go-to guy. You know, Blackjack Lanza, another good guy, but they were always ready for advice back then. If you went to Vince, like, you bypassed the whole structure of the company.
So, yeah, I get you.
I wasn't like Steve Austin and Taker can go to Vince. I'm not going to Vince. I'm just going to go to Jerry. That's what I should do.
Yeah. Can you imagine the environment there now without him in it and without getting into everything that he was involved in or whatever, but just looking at the picture from here, imagining him not being there, it's kind of weird, isn't it?
It's very odd to me. I mean, listen, Hunter's a great guy. I know he would Hunter. Wonderful guy, doing a great job with what he has.
Yeah.
All this nightmare stories about Vince, I've never seen any of them. He's just he was a funny dude. Like, I don't care what he does behind his wife's back. It's none of my business or anybody else's for that matter. But
yeah,
I don't see the horror stories. Right? Like, he's a funny guy that took care of all his employees, made them millions of dollars, and now they're all turning on him because of some girl and rumors or whatever their relationship was. Crazy. He's a wonderful guy. I got nothing bad to say about the dude. I never would. And anybody does have something bad to say about him, shouldn't base it off of a rumor.
Exactly. And like I always say, like, even in life, never mind, and on this show and whatever, like, let everything play out in the law before we make assumptions on anything. And I think there's a lot more twists and turns to come in that side of things. That's just my opinion on it.
There's always two willing participants. Let's be clear on that one.
Mm-hmm. Billionaires cheating on their wives. Johnny. Not exactly big news. Yeah.
I'm not that surprised, right?
Yeah. Okay, any memories of working with Billy Gunn?
Billy, I think I only worked Billy once. Really good guy. Decent match, not great. I think we only had like 5 minutes, so did the best we could. But he's a good dude, man. Great shape. The dude's in ridiculously good shape.
And the guy is still going. It's fucking crazy.
It's insane. And a nicer guy there could not be. Like, just a great dude. And he let me kick out of his finisher. If you watch it, I kicked out of the finisher.
Yeah.
So no one did that. So that first time he used the new one, the one and only, was on me. But no, I kicked out. And even Paul Bear, because I went in the following day. I think we were in Baltimore the following day. And Paul Bear grabbed me. He was like, did I see that? And I was like, yeah. He's like, well, you must be respected and liked. Grab a seat, kid. Thank you. And then, but he was a good dude, smooth. And dude, you watch the match. He let me do whatever I wanted. And he sells like a son of a gun. What another great guy. I'd like to work him again. Mm. He's 62. 62 with abs and 20-inch arms. That's pretty damn. That's a big son of a bitch. 21-inch arms. I figured that.
Do you keep in touch with the current product, or are you still watching, or do you just kind of keep an eye on the news, et cetera, et cetera?
I watch it. You know, I thought WrestleMania, which is in my hometown of Philly, I thought it was going to be the worst WrestleMania of all time. I looked at that card and I was like, this is going to be awful. It was one of the best WrestleManias I've ever seen in my life. Everything was on point. Yeah. I got to give the crew credit. Everything from the stage, the way the presentation, and the matches. I don't think it was a bad match on the card.
Yeah.
Stone Cold.
The only match people were speculating that may have been not lived up to the hype was the Jimmy and Jey Uso.
I love the Samoans. Love them back.
Yeah.
Too many super kicks. How many super kicks can you throw in a match? But hey, listen, the Samoans are great. I've worked every one of them. In fact, the first time I worked Lance Onoy, which is Samu's son, he was 5 years old.
Wow.
Offered Judy, every one of them, Sam, all the head shrinkers, everybody. So they're a great family, the kindest, nicest people in the world. And talk about tough. They are some tough sons of bitches. You beat on them for an hour, you're not going to hurt them. And they're smooth, man. They never touch you, no matter how big they are.
What do you think of AEW now? It's not looking good, is it?
Anything that helps the business, I'm on board for.
Yeah.
But what I see there is the inmates running the asylum. It's very immature. I don't see any good angles coming out of it. I just see it getting worse and worse every week because there's no one there trying to put AEW over. They're all trying to put themselves over. Does that make sense?
Yeah. What I always say about it is, like, he's got some amazing wrestling people around him, but I still think that Tony is just making all the shots. And that thing he done with the CM Punk a few weeks ago, security footage, was embarrassing. Going to the NFL draft with a neck brace on, then I don't know.
I love CM Punk. Great guy.
So do I.
Great guy, dude. Anyone says something bad about him, I don't know what guy they're talking about, because Punk and I get along great. AEW, man, dude, the angles are just bad. You know, Edge went there, I guess, to hang out with Christian. I can't see him not regretting that decision.
I seen him walking out a few weeks ago to do a segment. I think it was the night where they aired the Punk footage, and this was before it even happened. I just seen the look on his face, and he was just like, I don't want to be here.
There's nobody there, and they're not selling. They're giving tickets away. And people still aren't showing. Mm-hmm. So at what point do you change direction? I don't know the Young Bucks. They might be the nicest guys in the world. I don't think they're that respectful to the business based on what I'm looking at. You know, all they're talking about CM Punk, how they were scared to death, CM Punk. Over what? he shoved the guy. Like, this goes back to what I said. We were tough. Like, we were tough. Fuck, Booker T and Batista got in a fist fight in the locker room. We all laughed. Nobody was scared to death. You get 200-300-pound guys fist fight, everybody's laughing about it. You see him, Punk, who's what? 210 best?
Yeah.
They were scared for their lives?
Yeah.
That's the point. Very childish. They're just putting themselves over and not putting the business over. And that's not how you draw houses.
Okay, so you mentioned Batista and Booker T there. Go ahead. That sounds like a good one.
Well, you can Google that and talk to them about it. But they got the fist, like, Booker T owned them. Booker T, yeah. I wasn't there, but I missed it. But I heard all the rumors and stories, and they're all laughing. And there was another story where the Giants, which which was a big show at, oh, God, who's the guy from the Middle Eastern? The Middle Eastern gigantic guy.
Great Khali.
Great Khali, and Big Show got into it. And then everyone's running and screaming. I heard that story, so I was laughing my ass off. But they all laugh about that stuff. But we're all grown men. You know, fist fight, you shake hands, you're part of friends, right? You know, you don't carry that with you.
Yeah. You mentioned Punk was a great guy. Did you have any interactions with him, or did you ever get to wrestle him?
I never got to work Punk. First time I ever met Punk, we were on our way, was Southwest Airlines out of Baltimore to Nashville to wrestle for Jeff Jarrett. We're going down there. He was walking down the aisle. I had an open seat next to me, so we sat down and we just hit it off, man. Just talking about music and life and wrestling, and just a good guy. Very good guy.
Yeah.
Lost contact with him after I got out, but I'd like to talk to him again. He's a good dude.
Yeah. He seems to be really enjoying life there now after considering everything that happened as well, you know?
I don't know what happened. I don't know what he was mad about, but hey, listen, you're not the same guy you were 10 years ago. So I know they buried the hatchet. He's happy to be back. That's his home. That's where he made a lot of money there. Why wouldn't you put it there?
Yeah. We all mellow out with age, I think.
You're in a high testosterone environment, right? And everybody's trying to step over everybody else to get to the top. So he was champion for a good 3 years. That's a lot of pressure on you sometimes. And maybe it wears you out. It's tiresome. Mm-hmm. You know? The belt weighs about 30 pounds, but the carrying it, that thing's heavy, man. Like, the weight on your shoulders is heavy. So, you know, you get people to ask you to do jobs, and you're the champion, and it doesn't make sense sometimes. It loses the fun. So I guess he wasn't having fun. If you're not having fun, go do something else.
Yeah. You mentioned briefly there wrestling Nathan Jones. Obviously, they had massive plans for him back then. What was your experience like wrestling with him?
Well, great guy. Very nice guy. It almost didn't happen. Sarge actually grabbed me earlier in the day. Said they hand-selected me to work with him. And I got in the ring with him. Undertaker was the agent for that match, actually. So,
wow.
And I think Fit Finley was involved, too. So we were putting the match together, and Nathan's, dude, he is massive human being. Like, if you've ever seen him, he is humongous. And he's a cool guy. He was kind of being a baby. Because, like, we're practicing, and he kept, like, his legs are so big, my shoulder would hit his leg when I was trying for a takedown, and he would get all mad. So they were going to cancel the match. I said, absolutely not. We're doing this. We're going. I'm going to call this the ring. We'll be fine. And then Undertaker and I put the match together, and Undertaker put a stamp on it. And actually, it was a great match. It really was one of Nathan Jones' best matches. Kurt Angle and them met me backstage the second I walked through, and they're all giving me hugs. But in the middle of that match, there was a spot where he was going to pie face me and threw me down. So I took the bump, and when I got up, I was going to take a spin kick. Now, Nathan Jones is a legit, like, third-degree black belt. This dude's he's a badass. But his legs are, you know, 40 inches around. So when I came up, I had my arm up, but he still knocked me out cold in the middle of the ring. I was out. So I was down. So they were going to call the match, but Nathan Jones is shaking me on the ground, and he's going, yeah, you okay? He's okay. He's okay. He's okay. He kept saying he's okay. I'm like, keep going. Keep going. So we finished the match, but I had a hell of a concussion. So I didn't mention it when I got backstage, but on the ride home, I had to pull over, and I chilled out for a little while. Good guy, good match.
Do you think that he just wasn't ready for the magnitude of push kind of they wanted to give him at the time? Obviously, they wanted him to face Undertaker at Mania, and that kind of fell through in the end. Do you have any recollection of that?
Well, you know, they did push him fast.
Yeah.
He needed more time. He needed more dark matches than what he needed with guys that could move. I think they kept putting him in there just let him squash guys, but he actually didn't get there were guys that could work. It's great. You go in there and squash somebody in 13 seconds, but it doesn't make you any better, right? I mean, look at Great Khali. Mm-hmm. No one's going to have a technical wrestling match with Khali. He's a big guy walking out, but after that, it kind of fizzles, right? No disrespect to Khali.
Yeah.
So they really needed to put him in there with someone like, even like a test or somebody like that could go and let them do their things. And that's how he should have learned, not just by beating up little guys. But, hey, listen, he was willing to listen and learn. And after that, him and I got really cool after that. He loved me. You know, he's a great guy. I have nothing bad to say about him either. But he didn't love the business. He was there for the paycheck. He's an actor. He's a movie star.
Yeah. And you could tell, obviously, when you mentioned that Taker wrote that match then, that he really wanted this to go well for him as well, you know?
He did. Taker really saw something in him. And when you look at the guy, he should draw money. He's a good-looking guy, and he's gigantic. Like, gigantic. And legitimately one of the strongest men in the world, right? So he could have drawn a lot. He didn't love it. That was probably the biggest problem.
Yeah.
That's why he got the airplane and went home, right? Did he just the airplane land?
Yeah.
When my music hits and I don't walk out, you'll know I don't work here anymore. I think that's what he said.
I think he's still in the movie business. I see him putting up Instagram posts on sets and stuff. I tried to get him for an interview here before. I sent him over an email, but I think he's just kind of done with this whole thing. He doesn't want to go on a wrestling podcast, that's for sure.
No, he probably doesn't. Listen, he's doing great, man. I can't say a bad word about the guy. Yeah. He's a very successful actor, so there's not a whole lot of 7'2", you know, Australian white guys with 30-inch arms out there. So he's got a niche that no one else is going to have. And abs.
Talk to me about, you would talk to me off camera about an extra work that you kind of fell into by accident in WWE that people may not know about.
What is it? Extra work? What do you mean?
Extra work. After the concussion, didn't you get thrown into something with Trinity, wasn't it?
Well, here's what happened. So when Nathan Jones on the ground strangling me to see if I'm okay, he keeps yelling, mm-hmm. he's okay. That's stuck in my head. So while I was driving home, I was thinking of that. And Vince was laughing about it back. Vince actually gave me a hug on that one because it was such a good match. And I kept thinking, he's okay. It was stuck in my head. I've been the biggest Evel Knievel fan. You know, if you grew up in the 70s and 80s like I did, Evel Knievel jumping, you know, Snake River Canyon was like Caesar's Palace. Like, he's the guy. So I was ready for a change. So I got home. I got my concussion checked out. While I'm sitting there, I decided to make a phone call and get an outfit made, a full Evel Knievel outfit. And I had this idea for a character, a stuntman character, based on Evel Knievel. So I had the whole outfit made. I think it was $700 for the outfit. And I got the boots. And I spent a lot of money on this. And I wanted to debut it on Raw. I just wanted to show up with it. So when I was ready, I did show up on Raw. I showed up at Penn State and went right to Jerry Briscoe. And he put me right in the match. But the whole plan was going to be, I wanted Trinity, who's a legit stunt woman. I wanted to have three of us, right? Kind of like the Dudleys, right? I wanted to have Kenny Knightel, Kerry Knightel, and Kevin Knightel, right? And what we would be is stuntmen, but we'd be racists, and we wouldn't know it. So we would be the KKK, and no one would know. But we didn't know it because we were fucking just idiot stuntmen. So even Hunter backstage just laughing his ass off as I walked out of the locker room in his outfit. Like, we wanted to have the skits where, you know, we're on the world's fastest, you know, motorcycle to break the land speed record. And we got the helmets on, the high-speed helmets, which looked like freaking big white pointed hoods. And we would take off the screen, crash immediately, and then come walking back on screen covered in soot, like blackface, with our hair all teased out. We'd go in the building and immediately bump into, say, Mark Henry, who would then take me to the ring and beat the piss out of me. So it was always an accident. But that was the thought for it. Trinity would be the legit stunt woman. We'd always be doing stupid stunts on Raw with the green screen and just, you know, like Super Dave Osborne shit. And they loved it. And then about a month after I debuted that outfit, I get a text message from CM Punk and Paul London and Spanky. And they said they stole it. Maybe they stole it. They sent me a picture of, what was his name, Jack Bull? Jack Bull at OVW wearing an Evel Knievel outfit. Did they try to steal it? And I don't know who tried to steal it, but I had written permission from Evel Knievel, so I called Tommy Dreamer, whom I love, and I said, Tommy, you got to take him out of the outfit. So if you watch the OVW with Jack Bull dressed as Evel Knievel, you'll see that his outfit suddenly changed from the red, white, and blue to black. Because I was like, you're not stealing that from me. And that was actually my last show with WWE, was me dressed as Kenny Knightel for wrestled Harry Smith, not a great match at all. And I was very disappointed that they would do that to me. After the years of loyalty, but that's the wrestling industry, you know?
Do you think that's why the relationship ended, just because of that moment?
Didn't help. I was at a point in my career where I wasn't going to tolerate things like that anymore. I'd been in it too long. And I showed up in Philadelphia, not to be a prick, just to talk to him. And then me and Michael Hayes got into it a little bit and I left. You know, so it's all good. Hey, man, I hold no ill will toward anyone. So I kept my Evel Knievel costume in the closet and, you know, went on with my life. So be it. Mm.
But what did he say to you, if you don't mind sharing with people?
I was staring at laundry, you know what I mean? I was very nicely asked to leave the building. So. Okay. That's okay. I ain't worried about it. And then I kind of just focused on other things in my life, you know, sales training and teaching guys and coaching guys. And, you know, so my life's going great. I can't complain at all. I had a great run there. I was never a big star, but I legit was on TV more than anybody. Like, you can't, it's kind of hard to find someone more matches than me there.
Well, you can say that, you know, you work for the biggest wrestling company in the world, and not too many people can say that.
It was a lot of fun. It was a pleasure to be there. It was a pleasure to, you know, be in the big arenas. I got my one WrestleMania moment at 15 where I was a cop, me and Crowbar, actually, and a couple other guys from Jersey. And me and Crowbar, they put us in the back because you could recognize us. And we arrested the Big Show, and all we did was quote lines from the movie Jaws while we're sticking it in the car. And then that's my WrestleMania moment. But hey, at least I have one of them, right?
That's great. That's great. So what, like, did you do any other extra work? Is that's what I call it. Sometimes people will remember something that they had to do, like be an Undertaker's druid or something like that.
They had me, man. I had nights there. Dude, they used me so much. I had a night there where I was a cop. I wrestled. I was a cop. And then I had to go to a bar and get beat up by the acolytes. Like, it was constant. So I walked out. I wrestled I wrestled Godfather. Came into the back. They immediately stuck me in a police uniform. And I went back in and told me, go back out to the ring. And that was the night that that Chaz from the Headbangers was supposed to get arrested for beating up his girlfriend. So you watch the cops come down. It's me, Vincent Goodnight, and the Inferno Kid, Danny Giovanni. And, you know, we go down, and we're going to arrest them. And we put the handcuffs on Chaz. But Vince Goodnight, he handcuffed Chaz upside down. And then realized he didn't have the key to the handcuffs. They never gave it to him. So poor Chad is handcuffed in the ring. So we do the skit, and we're supposed to unhandcuff him. But I'm standing outside the ring, and he can't get the handcuffs off. So Inferno Kid, he just bails. He goes, all right, I'm leaving. I'm like, you can't leave him there by himself. It's Goodnight's first night. He goes, see ya. And he leaves. He takes the girl with him. So I think they ran me down a key real quick. And I go in the ring, and I'm locked. Unlock Chaz's one handcuff. But, dude, we were in there forever. The place was just insulting the shit. It was terrible.
Okay, we've got a comment here. We've got a comment here from Chubby Dudley. Oh, snap, here's trouble.
Ah, we've been watching. There's my boy.
We've been putting you over.
That's my boy.
Yo, JR, I'm sitting here with your wife at a bar watching this right now. Jane Wilcox. Is that legit, or is that just
my wife's around the corner with her friend? Her friend's Jane. So I guess her. Hello, Jane.
If you're sitting in a bar watching us, you must be very fucking bored.
We're there in the valley.
Go get some more drinks.
Order me some wings. I'll be there shortly.
Okay, this man needs to go to the bar. I know all about that over here. Look, before we wrap up, then we are going to talk about your life now, what you've been doing since wrestling. Was that the moment we just talked about there a few minutes ago when you said, fuck it, I'm done with it?
You're never done with it, right? Like, as Roddy Piper would say, we all have a sickness, a disease. So every day you're thinking about it, right? You're not like trying to get out of it. So that was a moment there, a recollection for me. I thought, you know, I got a lot of things on my plate that I could do. I was actually in the car business at that point. So I did really well in the car business. I became a trainer for that, became a manager, but used car manager. But, you know, come around 2014-15, I didn't want to do that anymore. And I wound up in the HVAC industry. And I've excelled at that, and I've helped companies go get to hundreds of millions of dollars. So I'm a GM, a COO, but I also do call-by-call for them. I have my own company where we answer all the calls for all the technicians and sell the stuff over the phone. I got a whole team of guys that are going out with us. And we do really well with it, man. And I have guys from wrestling that call me all the time, and I'll help any of them. Anybody wants a job and a new career, and you can't be a wrestler forever, you know, give me a call, reach out to me. I saw somebody just commented about my MTV I Want to Be a WWE Superstar special.
Yes. My really clever fans here.
So I was in Wildwood, the Tommy Fierro show, ISPW, and AFA grabbed me and told me that they needed me in New York the following day for a a tryout show that was going to be on MTV. It was supposed to be me, Glenn Osborne, and Julio Sanchez. We're going to go. Julio De Niro, the three of us. And then the next day, Glenn said he's not going. And then Julio said he's not going. So I guess I'm going. And if Papa tells you to go, you go. So I was at MTV studio at 6 a.m. in the morning by the front door in my outfit, as I was told to be. And it was fun. It was a little weird. I had to beat up a doll on national television. But as my mother would say, no press is bad press. Get your face on TV. So like I say, after that MTV thing, I was a global name. Like I wasn't, everybody saw that and it aired 100 times, you know? So whether I beat up a doll or not, everybody knew who I was. So it was probably one of the best moves I made, was doing that. It was an honor to be there. It was embarrassing at first, but you know, 6 million people watched it live. So did something.
Wow.
It was pretty good, man.
That's serious exposure.
It was very good. It was very fun. It was a good time. I should have kept the doll. I should have taken the doll with. I was supposed to win. And if you watch the end of that, Mick Foley deliberately picked the other guy as I'm almost stepping forward. I started laughing. And then Carson Daly, he didn't know what to do because he thought it was 6-3-2. He was a bit of an upset here. He was like panicking. The poor guy that won, he was a really nice guy. He actually thought he got a contract. Like, he thought he was fine. So I feel bad for him, but very nice guy. Very nice guy.
Yeah. Is there any chance that you would get back in the ring again for like a one-off? Or you said, you kind of hinted earlier, you're never done with it. Would there be anything that would entice you to get back in the ring for one more match?
I did one. I did one last year. I wrestled for Tommy Fierro last year. I wrestled Bull James, actually. Last year, ISPW, 25th anniversary. Wrestled Bull James, my first match back. Didn't even practice. Just talked about it in the back, went in the ring and did it. Now, me being a stubborn asshole, I just had a hernia surgery fixed a month prior to the match. I wasn't even supposed to be doing anything, let alone wrestling. I said, fuck it, let's do it. So, went in there and did it. I think I took two bumps. One of them was the old Nikolai Volkov bump, which is a 27-stage bump to go down. But it was a lot of fun. So I'm probably I'm dumb enough to do it again, yes. I can guarantee that. You know, I don't still have any bonbons. I'm in pretty good shape, so I'm ready to go. We'll see. The right opponent's there, you know, I would definitely do it.
Awesome, man. Look, it was a pleasure to talk to you today. You need to go to the bar.
I'm an Irishman. You should have been there an hour and a half. You should have met me there.
And I'm not going to hold you up.
Well, Reese, it's been an absolute pleasure, my friend. I really appreciate you.
That's been a pleasure, man. Thanks a million for today, and I'll talk to you again soon. Keep in touch.
You got it, my friend. Thank you.
Thanks, man.
All right. All good. You clear?